and welcome to the Scottish Football Show. Brilliant Barry Seals bumper bonus. Robson is made permanent boss at Aberdeen before his trial period is over. The most competitive league in the world. We look ahead to what is sure to be an incredible final day of the Championship season. And the Lanarkshire County is back. In your ears, anyway. Former Motherwell midfielder Alan Campbell talks to us about leaving Scottish football, growing up, and being on the verge of promotion to the English Premier League. No Andrew this week. He's currently living in an airport, Tom Hanks style, after missing his flight to Spain this morning. But I am joined by the much more punctual and flexible football filmmaker, Finlay Marks. Finn, you'd never miss a 6 a.m. flight. You record podcasts at that time every week, don't you?
Yeah, that's true, actually. I've never missed a flight in my life. I'm one of those people, maybe annoyingly, but like I like arriving at the airport in loads of time. But that's purely driven by the fact of the airport pint, to me, is one of the greatest joys in life. So especially if it's a 6 a.m. flight, I'm there at like 4 to get a pint and a bacon roll before the flight starts. So that's very much my way of doing air travel.
Gee, well, stepping in this week, Ewan Booth-Robertson, welcome. And Ewan, have you ever missed a flight?
I have actually missed a flight. I'm guilty on that part, but I'm not going to go into it. Okay, so just for past reasons. But yeah, very, very frustrating thing to do. I don't advise it for anybody.
Yeah, I can vouch for that. I think it was this time last year I also missed a flight to Italy, and it is the most frustrating and emotional thing I think you can actually go through. So Andrew, we're all with you there in spirit. God knows where you are in the world right now, probably sitting on a runway waiting for a flight to go, which will probably take about 5 more hours, who knows. Anyway, moving swiftly on, what has been happening in Scottish football this week, guys? What, let's start off with some funny stories. Have you seen anything been going on?
The thing that I enjoyed most that I saw over the past week or so was the story about somebody using Clyde One Super Scoreboard to teach English. Did you guys see this?
No, I didn't. What is this?
So it's a Scottish guy who teaches English over in, I think it's Sardinia, somewhere in Italy. And he's an avid listener to Super Scoreboard. And he'd forgotten his laptop one morning, which has all of his, you know, teaching material on it and everything. So when he got to the class, he's like, well, what do I do? And he had the genius idea of saying, now this is like an unfiltered Scottish production. What can you make out from these Scottish accents? And I think Gordon Duncan and Mark Wilson, they actually said they didn't understand everything, but most of it they could. I think the likes of Gordon DL, they struggled quite badly with. So as a tool for teaching English, it might not be the best thing, but I that really made me laugh.
Did anyone see Todd Cantwell and his little bit of shithousery when Rio Hatate wanted a bottle of water from the Rangers physio, and he just picked up the bag, moved it round the corner, made sure he couldn't get a bottle from it, and his face was just like, what? I just wanted a bottle of water. And I did like later on, because he then found the bag, and you can see him looking at the other Rangers players going, water? Am I okay to take this? He's actually asking permission if he could take the water. I kind of liked how it was just a wee bit cheeky. I like those wee kind of sneaky moments.
I think I saw him referred to, definitely not by a Ranger supporter on Twitter, as TikTok Todd. And I quite like that as a nickname, because a lot of his chat and behaviour and stuff like that, that kind of seemed to sum it up. I also didn't really get why Hatate was wanting a bottle off the Rangers physio. Like, would you not use the chance to go over to the sidelines to speak to your coaching staff about things you're doing or not doing well? Or I don't know, maybe it was just a vicinity in the middle of the pitch.
Maybe he was just really thirsty.
Yeah.
Far away from the touchline.
It's just a hydration thing, really. It happens quite a lot. I thought the funny thing about it was that Alfredo Morelos was actually the one to eventually hand over the bottle to Hatate, the notorious peacemaker. Yeah, no, his approach, he's found his mellow side, his approaches to leave Glasgow after a roller coaster ride of the last 5 years.
I don't know if people actually notice this, but the sports science guys, they actually just dot bottles of water, and you know, you get wee shots of hydration. It's like, I think it's wee shots of caffeine or...
Oh, it's not the hydrogel or something like that.
That's what it is, yeah. So you've got different bottles of that, they just place them all the way around the pitch. Yeah. So they're pretty much dotted around the sidelines for the players to just grab whenever they want anyway. Like, maybe this incident was right in the middle of the pitch. He was just too lazy to go over to pick up one of them.
Billy Mackay's managed to free himself up. What a finish! That is stunning from Billy Mackay. And he has a century of goals for Inverness.
Talking of the Scottish Cup semi-finals at the weekend, Inverness Kelly Thistle winning 3-0 over Falkirk on Saturday in the first semi-final, which now means they're just one game away from the European group stages.
Go on,
so
Kelly.
Goals from Billy Mackay, goals from Billy Mackay and Daniel Mackay secured a place in June's final for another trip back to Hampden. Okay, albeit they're up against Celtic, who are going for the treble after they knocked out Rangers with their 1-0 win on Sunday. But look at, right, listen to this. So Kelly Thistle, if they win the cup, they'll go into the Europa League playoffs. And even if they lose the playoff, they'll drop into the Europa Conference League group stages. So that's a guaranteed £3 million prize money and about £250,000 in TV money alone. And that's before we even talk about like the results from the group stage games. This is incredible if this actually comes through. What do you guys think? Is this like a really good Hollywood story? Or are we talking about a team here that could still be in the championship next season? Is that going to just give our coefficient an absolute battering?
Well, I don't think it will happen to start with, because in almost no universe, despite, you know, trying to look at it from the everything everywhere all at once timeline, there's no scenario where I can see Kelly Thistle beating Celtic in the final, sadly.
Kelly Thistle have beat Celtic in three different cup competitions over the last, what, 10, 20 years? 2000 was the first one, the Super Kelly one. There was the other one a couple of years after that, and then there was a semi-final one, you know, the one that was really controversial with the handball incident. That was 2015. So in the space of 15 years, they've been put out three times by Kelly Thistle in cup competitions.
I still think it's an entirely different...
the realms
different...
of impossibility?
I mean, statistically it could happen. I'm just thinking 99.9% chance that it won't. Just Celtic this season are too strong a beast. I just can't see it happening. But I mean, it's a cool story. It would be good if it happens.
I think it's an even better story because they've actually been knocked out of the tournament already this season. and they're literally only in it because of a technicality. Like it's Scottish football to a T, isn't it? You know, knocked out again.
But it would be an absolutely incredible run if you've got teams that, like, every season we've got teams struggling to get into Europe and into the group stages, and Inverness's path would be beating Stirling Albion, Queen's Park, not even beating Queen's Park, Livingston, Kilmarnock, Falkirk, and then getting through because they beat Celtic in the cup final and then lost in the Europa League playoffs, and that's their journey to a European group stages. That would be some story for them.
I side with Finn here. I can't see it happening. But from an Inverness point of view, I hope all eyes are on the cup final when they take their eye off the ball this weekend and Thistle can ease into the playoffs. But I'm actually really interested to see how the allocation will be for the final for this, because, you know, Celtic can sell at the stadium themselves. You know, it's not going to be, I doubt it'll be a 50-50 split, but would fans of other clubs go to the game in the Inverness end if the tickets were on open sale? I think they probably would.
Surely the starting point's got to be 50-50. And if an away support can't sell out their away allocation, then more tickets are given to the other club in case they can do that. Because, you know, like you're saying, Celtic would sell it out themselves. So,
well, one team that we'll be looking at, obviously, for that result will be Aberdeen, because their fight for Europe, obviously their positioning that they finish in will determine which competition they go into and which stage of the competition as well they go into. This week, they've given Barry Robson the manager's position on a permanent basis. So he took charge in January after Jim Goodwin was sacked. And since then, he's racked up 8 wins in 10 games. Surely this is just reward for an incredible turnaround.
Yeah, massively. He completely deserves the job. The turnaround, I don't think you can understate how impressive the turnaround's been. You know, when he took over Aberdeen, when turmoil also got thrashed off Hibernian and 6-0. They look like they're going to qualify, automatic qualification for European group stage football next season, which is remarkable. I mean, how long ago was it since Aberdeen done that? Look at all the away days the supporters will have. Aberdeen famously have had some brilliant nights in Europe. So he's done an unbelievable job. You know, you put him in, he's only put him in for contention for manager of the season. But, you know, if you create a shortlist of maybe like the best 4 or 5 in Scotland this season, you could argue to put Rob Solnit, but the job he's done, it's been remarkable.
Him going into the end of the season knowing that he's got the job going into next season, it's just, it it makes sense and it means Aberdeen can really start to make plans, I think, for next season. It'd be interesting to see what happens, I think, with Duke and Miovski particularly over the summer. I think, I mean, there's been rumours linking McCrory leaving to, I think, Bristol City have been one of the suitors for him for a couple of million pounds. I think Aberdeen are at that model where, you know, they probably will need to sell one or two players as well. But the turnaround has been insane. Like, you know, thinking back to January, they suffered literally the worst result in their history against Darvel in the Scottish Cup, getting knocked out. And you go from that to the last couple of months and they've been astonishing under Barry Robson. So it's great. I don't know how you guys feel as well, by the way, about the allocation of things like teams that get to the cup final and lose or that win a cup final over teams that have performed in the highest division over the course of a season. I think I'm probably more of the opinion that the team most deserving of a higher European place is not a cup winner. It would be the team finishing third in the Premiership.
So the way this is if Celtic win the Scottish Cup, then, well, as it stands just now, Aberdeen in third place, whoever finishes third, will take that Europa League spot that we were talking about.
Yeah.
So they, in that case, they'll go into Europa League playoffs, and if they lose that, they'll go into the Conference League group stages. But as you're saying, if Kelly Thistle win the cup, then they take priority for that position. And I know it's like it's a traditional thing and the cup winners always get a prize, but I completely see where you're coming from. And this is kind of what I was getting at when I was talking about, like, are they there in sporting merit? The run that Kelly Thistle have had compared to 38 game season where Aberdeen or the likes of Hearts, whoever does take third place, surely they've had a much harder run to get their achievement at the end of the season.
Of course there's merit in, because you can only, the old cliche, you can only play what's in front of you. So if you get to a cup final, like it's a great achievement. And Cali Thistle have put out some big teams. And obviously if they go on to beat Celtic, that's an enormous achievement. I just think before the start of the season, regardless of who makes it to a cup final, the placings for me, like if it's a Europa League spot, I think that should go automatically to the team that finishes third. And the cup winners should still get a European spot, but I think it should be a conference spot. I don't think it should be, well, you've got the Europa spot unless you're the losing finalist and then we can swap you down. I just think it should always be de facto the third team in the league.
It's important. I can see both sides of it. Obviously, for the coefficient, you want the Scottish teams to, you know, pick up as many points and wins as possible, because obviously, you know, that's the reason that, you know, the performance of, you know, Celtic and especially kind of Rangers in recent seasons is why our coefficient is so good. And what's provided these places that, you know, the kind of guaranteed European football. I mean, and that money going to a Scottish club is makes such a difference, you know, playing those games, and not just on a club, but I think on the enjoyment of the season for a supporter, getting those European trips.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see the coefficient side, but at the same time, I mean, you probably look at the clubs who, you know, your Hibs and your Dundee Uniteds and Hearts, and you think they should be doing better in the Scottish Cup as well. So yeah, you can weigh up both sides.
Shall we round off the news this week with what is becoming what feels like a weekly no pyro, no party installment on our show? So the latest story is the Scottish Government are allegedly attempting to up their powers to deal with the smoke canisters at football games ahead of the Scottish Cup final. I think their aim is to kind of bring these powers in June. So it will only be the Scottish Cup final that it impacts if this comes to fruition. It comes after, obviously, the incredible scenes in the semi-final between Rangers and Celtic, where, quite frankly, both ends of the support had incredible displays as the teams were walking out the tunnel. There's not a lot of detail in this story. Finn, I don't know if you've kind of caught up on it. It seems to me like there's a lot of scare stories going around, and yet again, the media aren't really embracing the fan culture side of this and just want to peddle the message that the government and the police are kind of handing them. Is that fair to say?
I think yes and no. I mean, like, I know you're an enormous advocate of pyro, and I think I know there are a lot of people in Scottish football that aren't massive fans in it. I think I'm somewhere in the middle of the two, in that I enjoy the displays. I'm not fervently for it, not massively against it if it's safe and it doesn't impact on other people's enjoyment of the game. I think with some of this stuff though, like, because I mean, it didn't do it by much, but it did delay the kickoff. And for example, if that happens in a European match, you get fined by UEFA for a late kickoff. So there can be repercussions for clubs if these things happen. I think also as well, the displays are amazing, But I think there might be an element of it which is by allowing them to happen, you're kind of allowing a very, very fervent vocal minority of supporters to kind of have their way. And I wonder if it's just fair if there's slightly more of a discussion all round from all sets of supporters, because I know that there are quite a lot of supporters that really don't enjoy it as part of a match day atmosphere. It's difficult because it does add such colour and vibrancy to the situation, like to the occasion of these games, especially for something like a semi-final or whatever. I mean, again, you'll know more about this than we do, Laura, because I've been around, so specifically talking about like smoke grenades, like these canisters. I remember being over in Seville for the El Gran Derby, so Sevilla versus Real Betis, and being around the Betis fans, and they set off these smoke canisters. Like you can't breathe, you can't see or breathe. Like they set them off on the streets outside the stadium. It was fun to be part of that whole atmosphere, but being right next to one of them when they go off, like it's kind of scary because you physically can't catch your breath, and you can't see anything until it clears. So I kind of understand both sides of it. Again, if it's something that is, as tends to be the case quite a lot in Scottish football, if it's something where they're trying to legislate for something that they don't fully understand or appreciate, I think that's a bit dangerous as well. But I just feel like we're kind of going in circles a lot with this conversation.
Yeah, it does feel like there's, I mean, I always do say it, there's a lack of understanding, there's a lack of education there. And as I can always say, if fans don't want to be around it, there are other areas in the stadium that they can go to. If it becomes a well-known place, you know, like that's the corner that uses smoke and that's the family section, for example, it doesn't. It becomes known over time. This is just part of like a learning curve though, and it does take time. Obviously a semi-final at a different stadium is a wee bit different. The smoke didn't last for a long time. The effects are not long lasting. It's the same as standing next to a smoke machine in a nightclub or someone smoking a cigarette next to you. I've been involved in right in the middle of smoke bombs going off. I've also been in the same place. It was in Paris when I was in the middle of all that for the World Cup final, and there was tear gas going off as well. And trust me, there's a massive difference between the two of them if you want to argue over which one you can't breathe in. Also, in saying that, anyone who was kind of saying it was over the top should really check out Sturm Graz against Rapid Vienna in their cup final a couple of days ago. If you've not seen the scenes from this, it was utterly insane. The fireworks that go off, the stadium is black. So if you think that Scottish football is going in that direction, we're nowhere near that yet. Definitely check out what other countries across Europe are getting up to.
But I think that might be part of the fear there, especially for older fans or fans that don't really understand the whole culture that goes around the pyro stuff and everything, is it like, look at what's happening in some of the games in Europe or around the world or whatever. And it's like, I don't want that. Like, I go to the football to sit and see my mates, not to... Like, even you're saying... I'm just playing devil's advocate here, by the way. But even you're saying, oh, it's no different to standing next to a smoke machine in a nightclub or whatever. It's like, yeah, but if you're going with like your dad or whatever, or somebody else who's got a health condition, like they're asthmatic or something like that, like what happens to them? Where's the consideration for those kind of fans that are having that? And also smoke travels. Like it doesn't necessarily mean you don't need to be sat right next to them in order to be affected by the smoke or whatever going on. So I don't know. I just think it's one of these things where there needs to be more of a discussion and better understanding or trying to meet in the middle somewhere between both sides, people who are pro pyro and smoke and all that kind of stuff and people that are vehemently against it, and trying to figure out how we regulate something in the middle.
I just definitely do think there needs to be education on the effects it has, because I think there's a very easy one for people to come out with and go, oh, I don't like it, I can't breathe. And it's like, well, hold on, what are the actual hard facts here?
Can you not breathe?
Like, can you not breathe? What is this actually doing to your insides? How long is it lasting? What are the long-standing effects? It would be good to know these facts, and that will definitely help in the long run if we are good. Like, pyro's not going to go away. So we may as well be having these conversations.
I don't think there are many instances, though, are there, where smoke's something that's a health benefit? You know, it's not like it's going to magically change for pyro to be like, well, actually, there's negligible health effects for standing next to somebody setting off a smoke grenade at the football. It's not going to be good for you, is it?
No, but as I say, unless you're like at Hampden in a different setting, the chances are you're going to know what you're getting yourself into when you go to a football ground. You're going to know what section does what. So unless you're kind of a standalone game like this, the chances are if you don't like it, you're probably going to choose a seat that isn't in amongst it anyway.
I know we say no pyro, no party, but I think for some people they're very happy to be no pyro for me, thanks. I'm going home at 8:30. So.
Not on this show.
Big men are up from the back. El Mahoney, right foot. Whipshot. Oh, jeezy peeps, man.
Now, let's turn our attention to what is surely the most competitive league in the world right now. Don't know about you guys, but I am absolutely buzzing for this Friday night. It is going to be amazing. With just one game to go in the championship season, 9 of the 10 clubs go into Friday night's fixtures with something to play for. Two teams, Dundee and Queen's Park, they're going for the title. 5 teams, Partick Thistle, Ayr United, Inverness Cali Thistle, Morton, and the loser of Dundee Queen's Park are going for the 3 playoff spots. And at the opposite end of the table, we've got 3 teams, Arbroath, Cove Rangers and Hamilton Accies, all fighting the relegation playoff at the bottom. Poor little Wraith Rovers, they've got nothing to do. They're the only ones that, nothing to play for. But in saying that, they do have Partick Thistle, Ewan, and could still have a huge bearing on the outcome. How are you feeling going into this one? As a Partick Thistle fan, how are the nerves?
I'm afraid. Like, I've been, the last few games, I've been lucky enough to beat Thistle the last 4 games, which has been rare this season with work, but I've not enjoyed any of them. Like, it's been so nervous because it's like, in the back of your mind, you're just thinking as a fan, like, we could have won this league. Like, you look back at it, like, we lost 7 games in a row. We've lost back-to-back defeats this season against Cove and Hamilton, who are the bottom two this season. It's like, it's going to be agonising. First of all, probably going to finish a couple of points off the top. And every game, like the last couple of games, like, it's so tight. You know, Thistle can finish second on Friday night, or we could finish sixth. Like, that's crazy. Like, it's mental. The whole league is just crazy. It's like insanely competitive, but the standard's not very good this season. Like, that's why it's so competitive. Like you said there, Thistle losing to the bottom two sides at home back to back. Thistle beat Dundee, who look like they're going to win the league. Thistle beaten twice at Dens. It's mental. One thing for me, I don't know about you guys, but the scheduling of the games, I'm going to have one quick moan about the league. The last game of the normal season was on a Friday night.
Yeah, that's pure.
You're not a fan?
Like, I am in theory, but then you look at the actual fixtures, like, so Cove are playing Morton. So you think, you know, everyone on the line for Morton to get up to Cove for a 7:45 kickoff and people work to 5 from Greenock to Cove, it's not easy.
No.
They're playing that away to Arbroath again, it's another long trip. Ayr United and, you know, winner takes all game against Inverness, traveling up to Inverness. It's very difficult for those fans, and it's like, I know that the SPFL didn't know that this was going to all come down to this at the end of the season. But and I know that the game will be televised on Friday night, which is great because we get more eyes on the championship, you know, in the Queen's Park Dundee game, which is a title decider. So it's great from that perspective. And I love Friday night football. But I just think for the away fans, for those, you know, three could be big travelling supports, it's not great for them. Yeah, but even apart from that, it's what a match day it's going to be.
That is a point I didn't actually take into consideration, so that is very valid. Had this been a Saturday 3 o'clock, obviously it'd be very different. But one game on TV is also a wee bit frustrating. I get the reason behind it is because the BBC don't have the allocation to do more. And obviously, as you're saying, we didn't know this was going to pan out this way, so they've used up their allocation in the run-up to this. Having all the games on would have been incredible. I don't know if you remember, guys, back to, was it 2003, when it was Celtic and Rangers going for the title, when it came down to goal difference, and BBC One showed one game, BBC Two showed the other, and we were flicking between the two. Those were the days. If BBC could have done that again, it would have been insanely good advert for the game. But I'm hoping Open All Mics will still be on. I don't know about you, Finn, are you going to get up for it? Because I'm sure cancelling my plans for Friday night. I'm in the house and I'm all in for it. Are you going to set the alarm over in Melbourne?
I actually am, yeah. It's I think it's a 4:45 a.m. kickoff time over here for all the matches. But that's what's getting up at 5 a.m. Do you know what I mean? It's fine. I've got two little kids, so I'm used to it. But it's Billboard, man. It's phenomenal, and to have the actual title decider, but you know, the two teams vying for the title playing each other in the final game is phenomenal. I think I'm trying to think back to how we called it the other weeks. I my thoughts were for Thistle to make it through the playoffs, because I just think in terms of form and everything, I think Dundee will win it. I think Queen's Park are just, they've kind of tailed off as the season's gone on. But the likes of this, well, both the Thistles, Cali and Partick are kind of hitting form right at the right time. I mean, in relative terms, nobody's really been out and out flying in the Championship, but I think they're the two sides that look most likely, I think, to do it in the playoffs for me.
Nobody wants to win it. It's crazy, isn't it? You look at the top, honestly, like, it's like everyone, I don't really fancy going up this season. I have last season in the Championship. It's more exciting. Queen's Park have picked up 4 points from a possible 18 in the last six games. That's terrible. Dundee have drawn their last three games. You know, it's like those two. It's honestly wild. I thought it was quite interesting during the week when, you know, there was a whole ticket kind of argument between the two clubs when, you know, Queen's Park were not giving Dundee more allocation. You know, they probably wouldn't not get the best support. It's quite interesting to see, you know, the authorities step in there. I wonder if that's a present for moving forward, which could be quite interesting. But the Dundee fans, like, hats off to them. I've seen all the photos on social media today. They were queuing up overnight and for hours to get a ticket for that game. That's what it's all about, isn't it? Like, supporting your club, you know, getting to go to a game like this. It was so exciting. And just that's why I was talking to the fans earlier with the ticket. And they are the most important people, so we should always try and cater to them when possible. I think Dundee will do it. You don't say that with any confidence. It's impossible to predict neither of them. Seem to want it. I watched the game on Friday night and you think Dundee are going to win at home to Cove Rangers, but I mean, Cove went there with a plan to probably play for 0-0. They showed,
yeah,
you know, good gamesmanship, good game management, a little bit of time wasting here and there. But yeah, it's going to be a brilliant day. I mean, imagine you could get like the Champions League's on. I love the goal show. It's on BT.
Wow.
it's brilliant, honestly. Imagine you had a Championship goal show going to every game and like showing be absolutely brilliant.
Have you ever been at a game before where you're like listening to the radio or you're checking your phone for updates to really be across what is happening elsewhere and had that sense of the noise around the stadium when like a goal goes in and the kind of the news filters through the stands?
All the time when I was younger, and you always remember it on the radio, don't you? Like one person in the stand had like after your headphones in, like plugged in. This was like obviously before AirPods and before they even checked the scores on your phone, didn't you? I remember like so many games like watching Thistle. I mean, won the league a few times, they won away at 4 for the second division. Alan McGillan scored, and you're kind of checking all the time, you know, what's going on in other games. Those kind of memories stay with you, aren't they? Those are the special sort of games.
Arbroath versus Hamilton, this is a huge one. Arbroath can't get relegated straight out unless Hamilton beat them by 7 goals. And Cove win. They're still in the playoff place. They're still in the mix of playoff place, but they can't get relegated straight out unless that happens. And okay, look, you might laugh, but think back to 2014, right? Hamilton beat Morton 10-2 on the last day of the season. They needed an 8-goal swing to win the league. They got the 8-goal swing,
yeah.
But they also needed Dundee to draw with Dumbarton that day, which didn't happen. So they scored 10 goals when they needed to. They could very much do this again, couldn't they?
I mean, it's plausible. I don't think it will happen. Just given
you're ruining all the dreams today, Finn. Okay, I'm giving you hypothetical situations. You're
know.
Being far too realistic.
I know. I'm just trying to be pragmatic, but it's brilliant. Again, like just as we've got at the top of the table or at the bottom of the table, you've got, you know, two of the three teams embroiled in the relegation / playoff battle. I think realistically, Arbroath will avoid relegation, but. It's not to say I mean, and for it still to be in Hamilton's hands, I think I see Morton getting something off of Cove, but it's exciting. I can't wait to see how it all unfolds. And it's like, remember that drama of thinking back to the World Cup when it was on, the last round of group stage matches which are being played simultaneously, and you can go, the league table can change, you know, within a 5-minute period. Mm-hmm. You can have the team that's in fourth then going up to first and vice versa, and it's so dramatic, and as a neutral watching these games, it's just the most exciting thing about it. So it'll be great. Yeah, I'll have open all mics on and the Dundee game on and everything, so can't wait. It'll be awesome.
What else is going to happen as the games progress? Other teams will know what they need to do. Mm-hmm. And what,
yeah.
So we're going to get crazy games, like teams, you know, really going for a goal, you know, throwing the proverbial kitchen sink at them and stuff like that. Because, you know, Ayr and Inverness could draw and then Morton could win, which would put them into the playoff over both of them. I think Cove will end up in one of the relegation places, and I think Hamilton will as well. What way around that, I don't know.
It really is just like the whole season hasn't counted and they've just dropped in like 10 teams into the ring for the last day and just went, do you know what? Battle it all out. Nothing has mattered up until this day. Just go for it. Hell for leather.
A championship Royal Rumble. Like, what better way is there to close out the season? It's fantastic.
Like elsewhere, just at the weekend there, Peterhead were obviously officially relegated. We kind of think we knew it was coming, but the 2-1 defeat to Kelty Hearts officially sealed their fate. They did lose a 92nd minute winner, but the defeat was irrelevant in the end. A draw would have put them down anyway. And also in the Pyramid playoff, just over 2,000 were at Ainslie Park. This is brilliant. For the Spartans game against Brechin City. So Spartans won 1-0, the last minute winner. And they'll now defend their lead away from home next weekend, obviously with the winner playing Albion Rovers for that League Two spot. Great crowd there for the Pyramid playoff, isn't it?
I think also an interesting comment as well in the news of the last couple of weeks with the essentially what will be a B-team league being voted in at the detriment of a lot of Lowland League and Highland League clubs. So, yeah, I mean, just great to see. And they're two teams that are ambitious and have had really good seasons as well. Spartans particularly have been really impressive in the Lowland League this season. So it's great to see that many fans turning up, and the game's in good health even at that level of the league system or non-league system as it is. So yeah, and it's still on a knife edge as well. It'll be good to watch a second leg of that one too. It'd be interesting to see what happens with Albion Rovers as well, because I mean, how many times have the team finishing bottom of the league system going into the playoff lost and kind of, you know, disappeared into the sunset? I think a lot of teams have found it really hard to get back up. Brechin City, of course, being one of them, and Berwick Rangers are another one who have just, I don't know if they'll ever get back into the league system. So it can be a bit of a death knell for the teams that are at the wrong end of League Two. But it's still great that there's still so much good football going on at this business end of the season.
Regrets, no, it's good laugh on it. So
I didn't find it funny.
This time 2 years ago, Motherwell fans' favourite Alan Campbell was coming to the end of his contract and made the huge decision to leave the club he'd been at his entire life. He moved to English Championship side Luton and just missed out on promotion to the Premier League in his first season. But he's got another chance this year, with the club securing their place in the playoffs yet again. Myself and Andrew caught up with Alan to find out how he's progressed since he moved away from ML1.
Alan, you were only 22 when you moved from Motherwell to Luton, which is just, for anyone who doesn't know, is just outside London. It's like just over an hour's drive. Before we talk about all the football stuff, you know, what was that move like for you, kind of leaving the comforts of your home? It's quite a, you know, it's a young age to leave and go quite far south.
I know, it was obviously a bit of a daunting time, but something that I was ready for at the time as well. I'd be playing first team for Motherwell for 4 or 5 seasons, and I got to a stage when I was like, I wanted to challenge myself, and I felt as if going to England to play in the Championship was a great challenge for me to improve, and also to come in my comfort zone a wee bit as well, because I've been at Motherwell since I was 9, so it's all I really knew. I knew everybody. I was sort of like the wallpaper. Everybody knew me. You just get comfortable being there. Your life was comfortable, and I just felt as if at a stage of my career and in my life I wanted a change and a challenge, and the opportunity came up to come down here and try it, and I was ready for it, and I've loved it since I've came down.
Do you always have that in the back of your mind, maybe thinking you would leave Scotland to play football, where that might be? And was there anyone, you know, in your circle of friends or maybe family that kind of you would lean on to kind of get more advice on that sort of thing?
I think as a player you always want to play at the best level you can. And I think the Premier League is probably the best league in the world. And for me, that's one of my targets, is to play at that level. And I felt as if coming down here at the Championship was a good platform for me to try and show what I'm capable of down here, because a lot of people in England don't really know all of you in Scotland. So to come down here to try and get your name out there, play well, and to try and get to that Premier League. And it obviously helps when there's a few Scottish players that have done that same path. You can see that you can do it. So that was probably my thinking behind it. And then my family and I just support all my decisions. They just want me to do the best for me to improve. And for me coming down here, they supported it, and they were brilliant, and they come down every so often that they can't see all the games, and No, it's been good.
How was that from a kind of a personal side before we get into the football? Because you lived at home, didn't you, before when you were at Motherwell? You've obviously got like a long-term girlfriend as well. Is she still back home? Like, how was the kind of move from a personal side off the pitch?
I think I was kind of, I was getting to a stage where I was prepared for it myself, getting a bit older. Also, my girlfriend, we've been together for a long time. We were getting to that stage when we'd like to move out. And obviously coming down, it just kind of helped everything really, because we just moved it straight down here. She came with me, and thankfully she did, because I think that helped. I wasn't here myself. I had that support with her. We both were kind of going through it together. And don't get me wrong, it was hard the first 6 months or something, really, just trying to settle in, because everything you're used to is up the road. There was nobody here to support me, and plus, as you said, it's not as if it's a couple hour drive. It's all the way down in London, so it's a long way to come for your family. So to have her here was so helpful. It helped me settle in, and it helped us get closer. And I think we're really enjoying Langston here at the minute. We've kind of made this our wee home now. I think it's mad to say that when you're up there, you wouldn't think anything else about being away from Scotland. That Scotland's your home. You can't think any life outside that. But to say 2 years on now that you're really enjoying yourself down in London and seeing this as more of a home now is brilliant.
It's weird that, really, because just picking up on that, I mean, I moved to London when I was 21, 22 as well, and I used to always think, like, how am I here? Do you know what I mean? Do you get that kind of feeling sometimes? You think, 2 years ago I was in Glasgow or Motherwell, you know, but now I'm here. Like, what's happened? Has it all been too fast?
I don't know. It's crazy to think that it's been almost 2 years that I've been away from home. It's mad. Time just flies by. But I think when you think about all of that, it just makes you think you need to enjoy every minute of it, because it's not often you get the chance to come down and live in London and experience this sort of lifestyle and cherish every moment, really.
Is the lifestyle different in terms of, like, your habits? Because when you were at Motherwell, obviously we talked a lot about you were in first in the morning, you worked so hard, you lived and breathed football, and your entire time was consumed with, you know, working out, concentrating on your game. Is it still the same mentality now you're in London, or do you have time to do other things as well?
Probably a bit worse in terms of being stricter. It's just me, so all I really consume is just thinking about football and how I can get better. But in terms of, like, the lifestyle, it's nice to have London at your doorstep. There's so much things to do on your days off if you get the chance to go a day out and experience what London has to offer. But in terms of all the work great stuff and the football side, I've probably got even more stricter, because you realise how close you are to that next step. As I said, the Premier League, you're so close to it, so it almost makes you want to work even harder to get there. And that's probably been the case for me coming down here. It's just made me want it even more, and I've probably worked even harder, really.
Since the move, have you been exposed to, like, more similar footballers in terms of mindset and kind of goals that have helped you kind of continue in your progress? Because I look back and remember when Nathan Jones signed you, he spoke about your mentality and your work rate, and he also highlighted that you've become a fan's favourite, which I think you have. But has the exposure to the standard helped you?
I think so. You're playing against better players, so you need to beat the top of your game. And I think coming to Luton's helped as well, because I think if you look at Luton, it's a club that's on the up. They're really ambitious and really want to do well, and the players that the club have brought in are the exact same. Everybody in that changing room wants to get better, wants to improve. So I'm going into that environment every day. Even the staff, the fitness staff, the coaching staff, everybody wants to go in the same direction and really work hard and get better. So I've only thrived off that. And I think if I look at myself 2 years ago and to where I'm on now, I've really improved physically off the pitch and on the pitch, and then obviously technically as well. And I think that's been one of the main reasons why I've really enjoyed it, because everybody's just striving to do well. And if you know me, that's sort of my personality, is always wanting to get better. And I think I've came to a place where that's one of the main things.
What's the coaching been like at Luton compared to kind of Scottish football?
To be fair, I've worked with really good coaches when I was at Motherwell, so it's not as if it's been much different. I look enough to what we all said. Stephen Robinson at the time, he's a really great coach, and no surprise that he's doing well right now as well. He was really good to me, 1-1. And obviously Graham Alexander for a left was the same, and he come down here and it's a lot of the same ideas, maybe just, I don't know, probably more staff, more time on the in the training ground to do things. And I think the main thing down here is a lot of games, so it's not as if we're training full weeks like you were up the road, was constant Saturday, so you had a full week to prepare for games. Down here is a bit different because you're playing Tuesday, Saturday every other week, so there's not a lot of time on the park, but most of it's a bit the same, to be fair.
I don't want to dwell too much on the English football side of things. This is a Scottish football podcast, but you guys are doing so well this season. Obviously, secured your playoff place. Now it's a question of just how well you do in that sense. You've got a real chance now to really push on and go up to the Premier League, haven't you?
Aye, I think we're in the same sort of position last year. Well, last year we had the last game of the season to get into the playoffs. This year we've managed to do it with a couple of games to spare. But I think the thing for last year was just that disappointment that you were close to getting there, and then to get that took away from you was disappointing. So I think the main focus is just try to make that wrong or right this time and really push into getting into that Premier League, because it's so close, as you said, it's only a couple of games and you're in there, so it's exciting and I'm really looking forward to it and just really want to make it count this time.
Do you still keep in touch with, or do some ex-teammates of yours keep in touch with you and send you messages of goodwill for this up-and-coming playoffs?
Aye, well, a lot of times I'm in contact with a lot of boys anyway, just throughout the season. It's not just that I get in the playoffs. And then a lot of people still message you here and there to congratulate you and getting into the playoffs. So, no, I'm still in good contact with a few boys.
You still follow the games? When you can, obviously, around your own.
I always watch, I love football. People always ask me, what's your hobbies outside football? And I don't really have much, to be fair. I just love football. I'm constantly watching games, any games really. That's Premier League, Scottish Championship down here. I'm always watching games and I just love football. So I'm always keeping up to date with what's going on up there.
So I worked the Luton game when they were promoted from the Conference back in 2014. And my experience of the stadium is quite amazing. I'm interested to hear your honesty towards what Premier League fans might expect when they come to Luton, and do you think it will probably be a factor which might help you?
I definitely help us.
It was the worst toilets I've ever seen in my life, Alan. The public toilets were, honestly, I felt like I was walking into a horror movie.
It's a really old fashioned stadium, but
yeah,
the atmosphere and there's brilliant, especially in the midweek games, and the fans really get behind you, and it's always a full house. And I think it's a bit intimidating for opposition teams to come there and get a result. So I think that would obviously work in your favour, especially if you're going against the top teams that are used to these big, massive 50,000 seater stadiums. And the luxury in that to come to Kenilworth Road, to traditional English stadium, and I think that would obviously really work in our favour, and it would give us a wee bit of an advantage.
So, Far Park atmosphere or Kenilworth Road atmosphere? Which is better?
I would say in a midweek game, probably Kenilworth Road, in terms of the more fans, and there's probably, I think there's normally 10,000 fans there.
Right.
But I do think Motherwell's, the Well Boys are brilliant, and I miss them, to be sure, because they always give an atmosphere to the stadium, and they're always there in the numbers, that section. I think that's really important in a game, that you've got that section of fans that really give that wee spur on. So I really miss them, and especially scoring a goal run to that end, I really miss that. So as a course one,
do you get many like ultras groups or kind of singing sections like that in the Championship? Because you get nothing like that in the Premier League.
No, there's not really much, to be fair. I think that's what I've missed. Up in Scotland, a lot of the teams have that now, and it really adds to the atmosphere. They're always the ones singing, making the atmosphere, even the having a bit of arguing with the away fans, and just that the atmosphere it brings to a game, really. I think that is kind of missed in here. I'm trying to think on the top of my head, I can't really think of any teams that I've come up against that have had that, so I do miss that.
Yeah, I know how you feel. I miss that as well. I miss filming it.
On the last podcast, Alan, I was talking about, because I produced the Wrexham game at the weekend, we spoke about pitch invasions, and Laura was very, very against the idea of pitch invasions. She kind of gave the analogy of you wouldn't run onto the Panto stage at the end to kind of say congratulations, which I thought was absolutely terrible. But as a footballer, and say Luton get promoted and the fans are running on, you would enjoy that experience, I presume?
Aye, well, to be fair, last year I was on the opposite end of it. When we got put out of the playoffs, Huddersfield were playing Huddersfield away, and when they won, all their fans ran onto the pitch. So that was a bit mad, to be fair, because anything could have really happened. Mm. But I'd imagine if you were on the one side, it'd be a class ceiling, because all the fans would be cheering, you'd be buzzing, and I'm sure it would be brilliant. But all I remember with that has been on the other end of it, and it wasn't the best experience.
Sorry, Alan. Didn't think I was bringing up some bad memories.
See, the Motherwell grounds will be listening to this now. He's thinking, don't do it, Al. Don't tell you like people on the pitch. You've been trained as well as I have.
No, I know.
This Motherwell groundsman sounds terrifying, Lauren.
That's all from us this week. My thanks to Finn and to Ewan, and of course, we Al. Hopefully, Andrew will be back next week if he ever makes it out of Gatwick Airport. And we hear from him again. Don't know if that's ever going to happen. In the meantime, go and enjoy Friday night. It is Scottish football at its best. You do not want to miss this. And then join us next week when we dissect all the drama. See you later.